Here we go. I call this meeting of the Audit Compliance and Title IX Committee to order. Can we have roll call?
Chair Carter.
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo.
Here.
Regent Arascada.
Here.
Regent Dubrava.
Here.
Regent Geddes. Here. Regent McMichael.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment in Reno?
No, we do not.
Do we have any public comment in Elko? I don't see any. Do we have any public comment here in Henderson? Seeing none, we'll move on to item two, consent items. I would accept a motion for accepting all of these.
Move to approve.
We have a motion. Do we have a second? We have a second. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. We'll move on to item number three, chair's report. So in my recollection, I think this is the latest we've ever had our external audit kind of extend into, and there's a few different factors on that. But one of the bigger ones is the PEBS board. It gives us a number that is our liability, and that number is quite large. And that number just came to us, I guess, maybe a week or so ago. And usually that comes to us months ago. So maybe our external letter when we get down there can tell us a little bit more about that. So we'll move on to item number four, change in leadership NSC, Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury, Chief Internal Auditor. In the audit summary document, I've included a table of the reports being presented today, which includes the updates on the follow-up audits that were just approved moments ago. As always, want to say thank you to the institutions with reports being presented today. We truly enjoy your partnership. That first audit report today is change in leadership at NSC. So the committee has seen this type of audit before, so you're aware that historically, when there's a change in institution president, we'll perform what used to be known as a presidential exit audit. The idea behind this review came long before my time, but we really feel it's a value add for the sake of the incoming leader. Have internal audit do a quick review of some standard areas so that he or she can be assured things are operating as intended, or we'll have an understanding of any areas that might need some attention. It makes sense. In previous committee meetings, we've talked before about how risk levels inherently increase. Anytime you see a change in a process, in a system, or in key people. These audits historically include expenditures review, things like host, operating, and travel, capital projects, contracts, financial account review for deficit balances, that kind of thing. So with that background in mind, for this audit, just a quick finding related to better documentation surrounding approvals, and especially in those important areas like hosting. And real quick, before I close, just want to say this particular issue is not necessarily unique to NSC, hosting and proper documentation around those processes. And so while this wasn't a full-blown hosting audit, that was one area that stuck out in terms of some of the transactional testing that we did and where some improvements can be made. And I won't get ahead of myself, but in our next item, I'll be speaking a little bit about auditing that area in a little different way than we have before, looking for some universal improvements on that front. Thank you.
And with that, do I have a motion to accept the change in leadership audit? So moved. Do I have a second?
Second.
Do I have a second? Is there any discussion? Hearing and seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Hearing no opposed, the motion passes. We'll go on to item number five, Internal Audit Department Work Plan and Status Report, Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. I appreciate the committee's continued indulgence on this item. So probably well over a year ago, I referenced the idea of moving our standard work plan away from the normal, traditional, static one-year plan and start moving toward a semi-annual plan. This is in line with best practices from audit shops around the country, and it's also a way for us to be a little bit more agile and flexible in how we perform. As I've stated in previous meetings, I think it's good for a few reasons. Want to give this committee as much of a real-time snapshot of what we're planning on working on, what we are working on currently, and the monitoring of items that we've already audited. So that this document essentially follows that same exact logic. So I'll point the committee to pages 3 and 4, which speak to the approach of how the plan was put together and the measures taken to ensure that this plan builds in agility and flexibility. And again, that's important because as unforeseen projects come up throughout the year, we want that flexibility to provide resources in a timely fashion. And that certainly came in quite handy in the last 6 months. So it speaks to some of the highlights and themes. I won't read those verbatim. But one continued theme, just overarching for my team, is relevance. You know, and to stay relevant, we need internal and external training. And in addition, just want to draw some attention to the increase in hours related to non-traditional audit work. You know, I think that we get a lot of positive feedback from advisory and consulting type work from the institutions, and really feel we can add a lot of value and ideally save a lot of costs. So, again, happy to speak to any specifics in terms of those themes, but did want to talk a little bit about risks and some of the other things that are, topping those lists, right? So at the core of what we're trying to do, utilize feedback from our key stakeholders, focus on where we can add value and address risks. Typically near the top of that list, especially this day and age, is information technology. Cybersecurity remains a top risk area on any list you see. So you'll see dedicated time to cybersecurity framework working groups, network security reviews, and other ongoing initiatives like PCI compliance. I think it was last meeting, about sort of changing our lens as internal auditors, and I'll use hosting as the example. Historically, in our requirement to look at hosting, we've taken a sample of one institution or maybe two institutions in a given year and look directly at those. So having the capability to utilize our technology to do an organization-wide review, there was a phrase used yesterday during the Business Officers Council that I really liked, and it was something to the effect of, optimizing the usage of our current ERP system. And that's really what internal audit can and should be doing, right? So comparing and contrasting how different institutions are doing things in real time, where hosting dollars are being spent, and that'll allow us to sort of leverage best practices around the system or point out anomalies. So something that's always been important to us, and something I think every auditor takes pride in, is that the concept of cost avoidance. If we're ensuring compliance and avoiding fines and penalties, and there's value in that, but we're working on more and more projects that have a direct cost savings to them, and taking on some of these things in-house that otherwise, an institution would have required to outsource at an obvious cost. This approach, combined with the agility and flexibility I spoke to earlier, allowed us to place our internal audit manager at this institution for the last few months, and I think she's been a critical resource. And so we're accumulating more and more examples like that, and quite honestly, successes like that. So I'll pause there before I move on to the next part of the report.
Are there any questions or comments for Mr. Sunbury? Seeing and hearing none, you can continue.
Thank you. So for those of you who've been on the committee for a few years, page 7 is where you'll see some of the charts and graphs that track our open findings at the institution. I like to remind the committee whenever I can that this report was pushing 200 pages in the past. And so based on some feedback and some formatting efforts, removal of some duplicative items, we're actually down below 40 pages this time. So much more readable. Won't put you to sleep quite as fast. On page 7, this graph is tracking our unresolved audit findings, and it shows five-year trends. So you'll see a few years ago, these numbers were in the 20s and 30s. And more recently, that number has been shaved down to 10 or below in terms of unresolved findings at the institutions. Now, you'll see a slight uptick from 2 years ago, where understandably some of the findings, had a delayed resolution due to being in the COVID environment. But looking at the overall trend, it's a trajectory that really has been positive, and that's really a combined effort, not only enhanced tracking by this committee, but hard work by the institutions. And I do like to add that additional background where, you know, this number, when the committee started doing this years ago before I got here, this number was in the 60s, maybe even higher. So, you know, whatever gets measured gets improved, right? So I think this is one of our more useful audit metrics. And, you know, beyond just general accountability, I think it's a strong indicator that management is kind of buying into and willing to accept some of the internal audit's recommendations. Thanks.
Are there any questions or comments for Mr. Sunbury? So that was, there is an action. So you have to accept the plan for next year. So do we have a motion to accept that work plan for next year?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Do we have a second?
Second.
There we go. Any more discussion? I will say I'm very pleased at the results for this. The work plans always look great. I think, you know, we've moved from being the committee of trying to get gotchas against institutions towards a committee and a philosophy of trying to help the institutions and provide guidance. I always appreciate this report. Hearing and seeing no more questions or comments, we'll go on and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any
aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. So we'll move on to item 6, internal audit compliance and title and updates. Chief Internal Auditor Joe Sunbury.
Thank you, Chair Carter. For the record, Joe Sunbury. We introduced this section as a standing item to be able to provide departmental updates and, more importantly, just have a placeholder to discuss risk. So in the past, I've used this platform to update the committee on financial aid-related findings, walk through risk assessment methodology, and speak about work that internal audit was doing related to other board initiatives. We actually have our external auditors in the room today for a rare March visit, so I'll keep the compliance updates brief. But I will say, and again, happy to speak high level to any metrics or updates on goals or anything related to our compliance hotline at this meeting, but did want to let the committee know that at our next quarterly meeting, by then I will have received some of our global benchmarking information, so I'll be able to bump that up and we'll really be able to do a deep dive against a nice little compare and contrast for our data. Now I'll make sure I've got all the proper metrics and background information related to our incident management system. I'll pause there if there's any questions, but otherwise I'll yield the time to our friends at Grant Thornton. Thanks.
Are there any questions or discussion for Mr. Sunbury? Hearing none and seeing none, that was for information only. So we'll go on to item number 7, NCAA agreed upon procedures, UNLV and UNR. Just as a little background, if you go back, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, we were very interested in trying to get UNR and UNLV to report the numbers the same way. They had slightly different philosophies in the way that they reported those numbers, so it made it a little difficult for us to examine those numbers. That happened in the Athletics Committee. And so this report kind of has made its way from maybe being, I think, what used to be in Athletics to now being over here. And hopefully we'll either find its way to stay over here or to make it to the full board in the future. Kim McCormick, all yours.
Very good. Thank you, Regent Carter. For the record, Kim McCormick with Grant Thornton. Good morning, everyone. Good to see you. Appreciate being invited here today to talk about the audit results for Nevada System of Higher Education. But before we do that, agenda item number 7 is something a little bit new this year, to Regent Carter's point. We've been invited to report out on a unique engagement that the system has hired us to perform called an agreed-upon procedures engagement. This is an engagement that's required by the National Collegiate Athletics Association for larger schools, and so it's conducted on the athletics departments for both UNLV and UNR. And it's what we call an agreed-upon procedures engagement. So what happens at each of these schools is they provide us a schedule of revenues and expenses, and we perform a set of procedures on those revenues and expenses as outlined by the NCAA. There's a good 7 or 8 pages of very narrow, specific procedures. I compare this with a full audit, which this is not. There is no opinion by Grant Thornton on the fairness of statement of that statement of revenue expenses. It's very narrowly focused on those areas that are important to NCAA. So both of the reports for UNLV and UNR are in your packets. And so you'll see in that 7 or 8 pages of procedures, to the extent that they are applicable, we explain that we perform the procedure and the result. And to the extent that they are not applicable, we simply explain we didn't conduct the procedure because it was not applicable. So again, it's rather unique engagement, but we're happy to answer any questions about it, and happy to shed a little light to this committee on this process that happens every year.
Are there any questions or discussion toward Ms. McCormick? Hearing none and seeing none, that was for information only. So we'll go on to item number 8, communications with those charged with governance. And she and Kim McCormick, all yours.
Very good. Kim McCormick for the record. So we rewind a couple months when I was last in front of this committee. It was actually early December when we typically report out on the audit results for the last fiscal year. And so I did report out to you actually the same agenda items that we see in agenda number 8 and 9, but everything was still in draft form because we were all collectively waiting for one piece of information that was needed for the management team to finalize their financial statements and for us to conduct the audit procedures. The key open item actually related to Nevada System of Higher Education's participation in the what we call an OPEB plan. So this is the PEBS plan that Mr. Sunbury mentioned earlier, and it has its own financial statement audit. This PEBS plan is essentially the health insurance for retirees of the state for which state agencies subsidize. And so every year, Nevada System of Higher Education reports as a liability in its financial statement its share of that total obligation. The total obligation is actually $1.5 billion. There are 24 participating employers in the state of Nevada. They each have a share of that. Roughly speaking, Nevada System of Higher Education represents about 40% of that. So in order for the finance team at Nevada System to get comfortable with that number, they have to wait for it to get audited. In a normal year, that happens right around the end of October, the beginning of November, gives them comfort with the number and the financial statements, and then we can in turn audit it. This year, there was a delay in that audit getting done, so we've been essentially in a holding pattern since the very beginning of November waiting for this audit. It was wrapped up last week. The number was affirmed to be accurate, and so therefore we were able to wrap up the audit. So in agenda item number 8, you'll see the attachment is a document called Communications with Those Charged with Governance. This, just as a reminder, talks about the overall scope of the audit and the results. It includes the findings that we already talked about in December, so I'm not going to repeat those here. Nothing of substance has changed since you looked at that report last time. So I'll pause there, see if there's any questions before we move on to agenda item number 9.
Are there any questions or discussion? I'll kind of ask one to make sure that I understand the delay a little bit. So essentially, we're the user of the PEBS audit, so we have to wait till PEBS is done. We roll that number into our audit, and then we do our audit, which gets then sent to the federal government, which is due March 31st. And so when one thing is not done, that triggers our audit not to be done, which could then put us in trouble with the Department of Education. Is that correct?
Kim McCormick, for the record, I think that is a very good summary. There's a ripple effect for them not having the audit done. And not only is it the state that you have to share your audit with, but there's other interested parties, too. And so they all those users are delayed by you being able to finish your own financial statement audit.
Thank you. Were there any other questions or discussion? Hearing none and seeing none, we'll move on to item number 9, Uniform Guidance Audit Report and Financial Statements. Ms. McCormick?
All right. In the same way, the attachment to agenda item number 8 did not change substantially since we talked about it back in December. The same holds true for number 9. Number 9 is the financial statements themselves of Nevada System of Higher Education. So this is the consolidated financial statement of all campuses, all the foundations, and the medical practice plans. When you last saw this in December, it was still in draft form because we were waiting for that PEBS audit. But what I told you then is that we anticipated issuing an unmodified opinion, a clean opinion, that those financial statements were fairly stated. So I'm here to let you know formally today that is indeed the opinion that we rendered. So congratulations to all for that good result, and thanks to all for their hard work and participation to make that happen.
Were there any questions or comments on this item?
Comment, Chair Carter?
Yes, Regent Arascotta.
To Ms. McCormick and to Grant Thornton, great job at a I'm not quite sure if everyone, I'm sure everyone read all 244 pages, 247, but I want to applaud you. That is very, very thorough, and it was a very impressive job. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This is an action item. We need to accept the report, so I would accept the motion.
Motion to approve.
I'll make.
I hear Regent McMichael making a motion and Arascotta seconding. Awesome. Was there any more discussion or comments? Hearing none and seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Hearing none, that motion passes. So we'll go on to item. Oh, thank you very much, Ms. McCormick. Moving on to item number 6, new business. Is there any new business? Hearing none and seeing none. We'll move on to item number 11, a public comment. Is there any public comment in ELCO? Don't see any. Is there any public comment in Reno?
Yes, there is.
Okay.
Thank you, Kent Ervin, K-E-N-T-E-R-V-I-N, for the Nevada Faculty Alliance. I'd like to make some clarifying comments about what that PEB liability is. So prior to 2011, state employees who had, if you were hired before 2011 and you had an after service for 15 years, the state provides a subsidy for retiree health benefits. This liability, but it's a pay-as-you-go plan, so the state doesn't actually put any money into that system until it's due to those retirees. So at NSHE, we have lots of current retirees and some future retirees who will get that benefit. But our employees who are hired since 2011, which is now represents a majority, will have no retiree health benefit from the state. And that's a big problem. Those who were hired from 2011 forward and they retire after about 2026, starting in 2026 with 15 years of service, these will be orphaned as far as the state system. So that liability will go down, but what it means is that our retirees will not have health benefits beyond Medicare. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any more public comment in Reno?
No, there is not.
Very good. Any public comment here in Henderson? Hearing none and seeing none, we'll adjourn. We're a little bit early.